friends.
Wah-ah.
Welcome in to the firm of Harris and Meringue. We're here every day.
You welcome me in.
10 to 1. Maybe I'm just saying hi. Yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they're burning it. This is how I talk. One of my all-time favorites. Why are you yelling? I'm not yelling. This is how I talk.
That is, if you had one
piece
of anything ever to see somebody's first reaction to, I think a lot of people go Game of Thrones, like that first episode, the end of the first episode.
Oh, yeah. All over the place, yeah.
That's a lot of people go to. Clayton Bigsby is 1,000% untouched the best first reaction thing you could ever watch somebody experience the first time live.
Well, that what I was doing is Samuel L. Jackson ale.
Yeah, I
Sam
know.
Sam Jackson ale. But my wife has never seen the Chappelle Show, so I'm like holding on to it to get her on board for it.
If you want the DVDs, I got both first seasons. I don't own a lot of DVDs. When those came out, I have watched those so many times on deployments, it is not even funny. It is, dude, like that. We had.
Mm-mm, bitch!
And he divorced his wife of 42 years. Bro, for anybody that doesn't know the Clayton Bigsby skit and like the origination of it, it's the.
Easy Rod.
I'm just going to say, it was the very first skit they ever did, and Neil Brennan and Dave Chappelle, the idea was...
It's insane.
If we can get away with this, they can tell us... They can't tell us we can do... There's nothing we can't do.
That's the truth.
And they were right.
They were 100% right.
Because after that, you can't touch that mountaintop again.
All bets were off.
It was just...
The racial draft, the mad real world.
The real Wayne Brady.
The real Wayne Brady. Shooting dice in the alley.
Oh, God, dude. I mean, just... Tiger Woods for shizzle.
I've always wanted to say this for shizzle.
Just, I mean, pure unadulterated brilliance.
It's pretty great.
Watching somebody's soul leave their body for Clayton Bigsby, like, can I laugh at this? Especially now.
I think my wife would be so uncomfortable.
Oh, God.
She would be so uncomfortable.
I don't think I've ever laughed harder at anything than the first time I saw that skit. I mean, I was 18 years old.
It was pretty big.
Oh, my. That was the last time we had appointment viewing in this country.
No, Game of Thrones was appointment viewing.
Not like that, though.
Yeah, like that.
No.
Dude, people had, like, watch parties. Glee was the same way. Hey, just because you don't like it doesn't mean...
I'm not anti-Glee.
Because you don't like it doesn't mean other people can do it. Just like USC shares a title in 2003. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean you can't do it.
They share nothing. Bar 2 confirmed that. HBO's different because Comedy Central was just a part of cable, where HBO was kind of the add-on.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy Central was still there. And so damn near, because everyone had cable back then.
Yeah. We all did.
That was the last time we had traditional appointment viewing.
Dave Chappelle?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Severance and Game of Thrones, like shows that people really, really like. That's different because they're on the premium packages and stuff like that. But I'm talking like mass broadcast.
I mean, the Olympics were still that back then.
I think that's different.
I know. I was trying to think of something sports-wise.
Yeah, I mean, Super Bowl.
That was appointment. Yeah. That's easy. That's a thing.
Yeah, but I'm talking about
the Chappelle Show's not every week because they have off season, but. Yeah. But I was trying to think of something sports. Olympics, I mean, still. But that's like 4 weeks of appointment viewing for sure.
Yeah. But I just mean like the TV show that you were sitting down to watch every week, especially after that.
The Daily Show might have been that for a little bit. Mm. That show was pretty popular. Maybe not to the extreme of Chappelle, because Chappelle's going to like touch all different aspects of life to where the Tonight Show, or not the Tonight Show, but the Daily Show definitely had a targeted audience.
Sure.
Still does.
But there was something about it where from 16 to 55,
yeah,
man or woman, everyone watched it.
Yeah, I can't believe things like the Dave Chappelle Show and The Office were allowed to be on TV.
Oh, dude, I mean, just incredible stuff. Like, is there a skit that Chappelle did that wouldn't get him canceled today? On that show?
I think he might. No. I was like, he might get away with the Mad Real World, but then there's like the dudes in the corner. Like, yeah. You can't do that.
Yeah. Shanking.
The shank is fine.
Yeah.
You killed my dad and you had sex with Katie.
The Milkman family.
Oh, no, I'm not touching that one. Not touching that one.
Best table anybody ever had here.
Well, he was using a word
I know.
He can't use.
I know. That's why I left it open. But like, it was social commentary that everyone got behind.
Because
it was like we were talking about Mel Brooks the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It was very similar to like it was Blazing Saddles on steroids.
Yeah, I did see there was a clip posted in the Dead and Co subreddit of Dave Chappelle and John Mayer walking into white people places like restaurants.
Oh God,
and offices, and John Mayer just playing guitar and people getting up and dancing.
Yeah.
There's an office that, like, a bra hits him in the face. She sits down and she's just exposed at the table.
The Mitsubishi Eclipse commercial.
Yes. I'm so into this right now.
Dude, it's one of those things where if I'm ever scrolling and it's like Chappelle's show, I don't care what I'm doing. I'm finishing that episode. I'm sitting down and I'm watching it.
I know. That's why I'm like, that's why I still haven't brought it to the wife's attention, because I know when I do, it's going to need full attention. Full attention given. Oh boy. Oh boy.
That's what you gotta just do it, dude.
Yeah.
Whatever show you're watching, you just go, you know what? We're in for a treat tonight.
I just can't stop laughing right now.
Oh, it's because it was brilliant.
Is Wayne Brady gonna have to be like, this is pretty good. This is pretty good. I'm looking at the YouTube camera right now and I'm still small despite sitting on this phone book. We need somebody out there to find an old school phone book. One of our P1s, the great Rufio, came in this morning and gave me some height stimulating equipment, performance enhancing equipment,
yes,
if one might say.
PEDs.
And this is I don't think this phone book's really helping.
No, it's
I still look really small over here.
It's not the old traditional phone book that's 4 inches thick.
Anytime I ever feel fat, I'm just gonna watch the YouTube feed and be like, look at that small guy. He got double chin though.
For those who don't know, he got a phone book and a milk crate. The milk crate for the pre-show.
That'd be cool if we could put the chair on the milk crate.
Just sit above the table.
Put the milk crate on the chair. Well, the thing is this chair does, like, move up and down. Like, it could probably...
You could go higher, but then you're all dangly-legged.
Well, I'm dangly-legged anyway. There's that better. Am I a lot more prominent on television? Hi, Mom, I'm on TV.
It happens.
It's too bad this show's not on the pot shop anymore.
There you go.
Those guys were like, dude, you're the guy that was on TV.
Mm. And you just kind of like pull the hat down a little bit.
Yeah, you're like, uh-oh. Oh, there you go. Hey, I can see it now. Yeah, dude, I look like a real person.
I look like a real boy.
I'm a real boy.
I'm a real boy.
We're burying the lead here. In today for Jeff Rust is the great Jordan Schultz on the ones and twos.
What's going on?
What's going on, amigo?
Happy Friday Eve.
I haven't seen you in a while, so I'm very excited for you to be here today and tomorrow.
Thanks, brother. I was in Boston. It was hot there, just like it was here. I thought I was kind of avoiding, you know, the 100 degrees, but then I got heat exhaustion there. So happy to be back here in the cold PNW for, what, 2 more hours before it gets hot all over again?
Hey, things weren't too bad. Things weren't too bad. I say you came back with it.
Oh, shut up. I hate the heat, so it can't be me. It can't be on my coattails.
Dude, I'm right there with you, man. I'm not a big heat guy either. I always say you can put on more clothes. You can only take so many off.
Yeah, that's true.
I got a phone call from my boy, Joe Simons. He's like, hey, man, you thinking about getting a tea time this weekend? I'm like, yeah. He goes, you know it's going to be a bajillion degrees, right? And I was like, yeah, it's supposed to be in the 90s. He's like, wrong.
101.
And I was like, wait, what? And he goes, you still going to go? I'm like, yeah, I'm a psychopath. I'm still going to go.
I follow map porn on Reddit. It's a subreddit. And
it
shows you like maps with cool stuff. I saw one yesterday that was like 100 degree temperatures on record since like 1900. Seattle had 6 of them. And I was like, where's Portland? Because I know it's been more than 6 since in my lifetime. Phoenix, Arizona was like 11,000.
Yeah, tracks.
Yeah, LA too, I'm sure. Yeah. Not LA, Vegas, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Florida was like zero.
No, because of the
same with Hawaii.
It's the humidity.
Zero.
Like,
yep.
The water keeps the.
It just bogs it down.
I will say, though, that does change as you get closer to the equator. I've mentioned before, I was on an island in the middle of the Indian Ocean called Diego Garcia. It's literally like on the equator.
My name is Diego Garcia.
Dope island. It's owned by the Brits that we lease it out for military purposes. The Queen actually has her crabs there.
What kind of crabs?
There you go.
The queen is also dead.
Well, I know, but it's like this is then. Her crabs and her lobsters. That's where they came
like
from.
Like what she eats?
Yep.
Ooh, baby.
And they had like coconut crabs, which are like a foot across. They're huge.
Do they have the blue lobsters there?
They're like the super, super fluorescent, like pearled lobsters. They're enormous.
Do the blue lobsters taste better, or are we still just eating lobster?
I have no idea.
I don't think it tastes any different.
Not to poo-poo on lobster.
They're just
lobster's
rare.
Fantastic.
You know what's funny?
But is it any better?
Lobster was originally seen as a poor cuisine.
Yeah.
Because it's basically a sea cockroach.
Well, and all the work you have to do, mm-hmm. like crab and stuff, yeah, it's like poor people food because you have to work to get at it.
Now it's expensive. It's so dumb. But no, this island, Diego Garcia, it's a horseshoe-shaped island, has this huge lagoon in the middle of it. I was out there with what's called a bash monitor. I had been deployed a ton, and I was supposed to go home, and I didn't want to go home. And my commander's like, well, you need a break, so I'm going to send you to Diego Garcia. And I was like, whatever, man. So I went down, there's a bash monitor, which means I sat at the end of a flight line in board shorts and a tank top and flip-flops with a shotgun and shot birds that were anywhere near aircraft. It was super fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think most people would find that job really awesome.
No, it was.
I don't find that awesome, no, but in a shocking turn of events, I don't shoot guns.
But it was only when planes were either coming in or taking off.
Yeah.
So I'd go out there at the sortie time, whatever time it was, you know, like Farmer Fran with my shotgun, do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And I'm going to tell you right now, man, the birds that are down there are huge. Like, you get, like, albatross, like, just big old birds, right? Because you're literally in the middle of nowhere. You have to be, you know, kind of big enough to get out there and then eat the big stuff that's out there. Anyways, I'd get done, and I'd go fishing in this lagoon, and we'd pull out, like, you know, 50 to 110, 120-pound tuna out of this lagoon. Just insane stuff. You'd pull out. So my buddy caught a 670-pound swordfish.
Whoa.
One guy caught, like, an 8-foot hammerhead shark. Like, you just take a little boat into this lagoon.
But you can't keep the shark. Well, at Diego Luna, what is it called? Diego Garcia, you can keep the shark.
You can keep anything.
That's illegal in most places.
Yeah, no, this is, come on now.
I hear shark is good, though.
I've had, you know, this, you know, for all the PETA people out there, shark fin soup, really good.
Yeah, I bet. I bet.
They really frown upon that.
I wouldn't do that because that's against the rules, Danny.
But it got like 115. With the humidity, too.
That's a no bueno.
Brother, it was... Oof.
I'm not into that. No, thank you. Don't like that. Mahalo. No. Oakley dokley. Well, we got a show for you today. A lot of college football to get to in the first hour. We'll have some fun in the 11 o'clock hour. It is Tears Day. Got a good web gem for all the bars on the north side of Chicago. A check-in on ESPN once again becoming our overlords in the noon hour. So a lot to get to. We're going to have Ryan Clark on at 10:30 from the Oregonian. Excited to have him as we will spend this first hour previewing the Oregon State football season coming up, the Beavs. What's in store for them coming off kind of a rough year? We're in transition periods here. What's the outlook look like as a new quarterback is in? Trent Bray, year two. We'll discuss that, and then we'll have Ryan Clark on at 10:30. So stick around with us. We'll have a ton of fun. We're happy to have you. It's the firm of Harrison Morang on 105.1 The Fan. 10:19 here, Portland Sports Leader. Don't you forget it. We are live from the shadows of the historic Fremont Bridge. 503-864-6326. That's the Fan text line. She'll let you interact with us throughout the entire show. There's also the YouTube chat. Shout out over there. There's a bunch of stuff on the text line that I can't read out loud in reference to the Chappelle Show. Yop, 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 yop. I do feel stronger in this chair right now.
There you go.
Like
a seat of power.
Like, yes, like more powerful. Like
a little Game of Thronesy.
Yeah, yeah. What is that? The Iron Chair?
The Iron Throne.
The Iron Throne.
God, did you even watch Game of Thrones?
After that last couple seasons, try to erase it from my brain.
Yeah, that's fair.
Try to erase it from my brain.
The best part about that is the cast being like, yeah, no, we didn't like it either, Bob.
Yeah, I've started to see some videos of like the table read, And
nobody real enthused about it.
Yeah, like the actor playing the eunuch, the Varys, bald guy, Varys. Yeah. He finishes reading his script when he dies, closes it, throws it across the table, turns around and just like rubs his eyes and is just pissed looking into the world.
I spent 7 years like building this kick-ass character.
Everyone will always know me as only this.
Yeah. And this is how you're going to do me.
I don't even remember how he died. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't even remember.
The only thing that I think they even got even close to right was The Mountain and the Hound.
Yes, I agree. I also
everything else, I was just like, whatever, dude.
I liked the Lannister siblings.
I hated that ending.
I thought it worked for me. It wasn't my favorite, but it worked.
Yeah, thanks to showrunners for taking creative liberties beyond books that basically haven't been written.
Well, yeah,
yet.
Blame George R.R. Martin for being lazy.
Well, no, I blame, Weiss and Benioff, the guys that created the damn show. That's who I blame. It's like, you guys think you're smarter than George R.R. Martin. It was his story in the first place, but look at you guys, you're billionaires
he
now.
He didn't finish it. That's his
still
deal.
Still not.
No, he still hasn't finished. Yeah, that's true.
He had 10 freaking years to finish it, and he didn't do it, man. That's on him.
Coming up here in about 15 minutes or so, we'll have Ryan Clark from the Oregonian join us. But I thought it'd be nice as we're getting ready to college football is to dive into some previews. Alex Brink will be on tomorrow. We'll do some Wazoo stuff tomorrow as well. And then next week, we'll take a good peek at Oregon, really kind of break that down. Maybe I'm trying to find somebody up from UW to kind of chat with them because I know there are some Huskies in this neighborhood. Those poor souls,
right?
Everyone feasting on them. But hey, you know me, I have them kind of high. So I'm going to try to find somebody and we'll chat a little Husky football next week regardless. But going into Oregon State this year, look, there's no lie that them and Washington State are kind of married at this point, no matter what the future of the Pac-12 is, like even this season in the last Pac-2 situation. One team had a pretty decent okay season last year. One team did not, but they almost flipped the script really hard as this year they are returning a coach. The other team is not. But Oregon State last year, 5-7, I think one of the real glaring things is 1-4 on the road. I try to take the Oregon game out of my brain.
Sure.
Because that's
holistically different.
Apples and oranges at this point, unfortunately. But, you know, after the first year of Trent Bray going to year two, is there anything to build off of last year? I mean, you have stability at the head coach.
Yeah, and you know, you brought some guys back in the coaching ranks. Hankerson is a solid running back. They went out in the transfer portal, and they got another big-ass dude at quarterback, going from DJ to Malik Murphy. And I think Malik's going to probably surprise some people. I don't think he's going to be, a sleeper Heisman or anything like that, but he's a big dude who's a serious athlete with a big-ass arm.
I would feel really good about this, and it's something I'll ask Ryan Clark, too, about NIL and stuff. To get back-to-back years of, like, pretty solid quarterback transfers, that's got to feel good for your program.
It's at least something, right? The problem is with Oregon State, and I heard Sprague talking about this the other day, their, you know, prize offensive weapon outside of Hankerson in Clemens is in a boot on a scooter.
Yeah, that's going to be really challenging. I think you hope, you know, we'll get to the wide receiver room here in a second, but sticking with Malik Murphy, I think you hope that the Duke transfer gives you that experience and kind of helps bring up that receiving room just in general, just having some poise, some experience, some, I don't know, being a big dude and kind of somebody back there. Because, look, quarterback play last year was not good.
Was not good at all.
I mean, some of the you can look at bad teams and they can still have some consistency at quarterback play. Let's take Tyler Shuck, for example, right? Four different teams. I mean, he wasn't terrible everywhere he went. He just always felt like he was more than he felt like he was hyped more than he actually was.
Well, it's because he's an enormous quarterback with a big, if you're building a quarterback in a lab, it's going to look like Tyler Shuck.
Yeah.
Like that's just how that goes. And I think honestly, you could say the same about Malik Murphy. I mean, Malik's a monster.
He's a big kid.
Big old dude. And, like, you know, for Oregon State, for them to be able, and, like, yes, Malik has his flaws, and yes, DJ had his flaws, but, like, you're getting guys that aren't, you're getting guys that were, you know, high-level recruits that have some stuff that, yeah, if you're smart and you use some ingenuity and you try to maximize those guys, you can do well with them, which is unfortunate in the sense that Smith left, and you know why he left, and,
right,
and it makes all the sense in the world. It sucks.
Hey, in comparison to their brother at Wazoo, look, we all thought Dicker was going to hang around, and we'll talk about that tomorrow, and he didn't. We all know why.
We all know why, and I don't blame them.
I don't either.
I don't, and it sucks, and I know Oregon State
Jonathan
guys.
Jonathan Smith hurts because it's Oregon State.
It's your guy.
Right, right.
And I thought if anyone was going to stay, it was going to be him, but he just saw the writing on the wall, and it's not a black and white thing. And I know for Oregon State fans, it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he betrayed us. He was one of our own. He didn't, and I get it, and I'm not mad at you for thinking that way. But I look at this program. I think Smith's a really good coach. I genuinely do. And everybody's like, oh, I hope he fails Michigan State and blah, blah, blah. But I thought that what he was building at Oregon State was building towards something. And it would have been nice to see him be able to push through this. And, because I think he's really good at maximizing and developing guys. And that's kind of what Oregon State has been, no matter what coach has been there.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the Riley years. Like, you look at Oregon State is not this, like, incredibly illustrious program. But look at for the where they're kind of perceived, and then look at the guys they've put in the NFL.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's a great point. And losing and not having Clemens makes that really difficult in terms of in terms of stuff like that. But
yeah.
But to my point of having two quarterbacks over the last 3 years transfer in and be stabilizers, mm-hmm, that's where Murphy comes in. I'll be really interested in see Trent Bray in year two, getting back to this coaching stuff. I know it's only his second year, and I know expectations at Oregon State have kind of faltered a little bit due, mm-hmm, to the current landscape. Nothing that they have done wrong, but just kind of the current landscape. This, I feel a little make or break with Trent Bray, because they started off really strong last year, minus the Oregon game. Again, I don't really want to kill him for that. But once that Nevada game hit, the wheels really fell off. Really bad quarterback play. Can't win on the road. You beat Wazoo, which is probably, the big game of the year. But if that game was in Pullman, do you win that game? I don't know if they do. And yeah, I think that game was 41-38, something like that. So this is a big year, I think, for Bray. I mean, I don't think he's getting fired by any means unless you go one win, two wins. But I'd like to see his hands-on approach a little more, right? He's taking over the defense. I'd like to see what that shapes, because I think the defense might be the strong point of that team this year.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a couple guys. Nico Taylor's out there, probably the most identifiable defensive player. They've got, a couple guys as far as like the, I want to call them gadget, but I'll use gadget players in the sense of like a Card, who's just a shifty little guy,
mm-hmm,
who can make some plays. And it's Oregon State has always been about the sum of its parts and not the individual.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been the MO of them. It's just the problem now is the sum of its parts. The gears don't probably match up as well as they used to, because where they used to make their hay was that they would go find a two or a three star lineman and turn them into an NFL player.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, like, can they continue to do those, to find the skinny high school kid that has the big frame that
hasn't quite filled out
and
yet,
and all of a sudden, like, really work with them and figure that out. And, like, that's what Oregon State has always done. Yeah, occasionally they would get an in-state guy like, what's his name, Musgrave.
Mm.
It was unfortunate that he got dinged up in his couple years at Oregon State, because he's a hell of a player when he was healthy, but, like, you can't count on those. You have to count on finding those diamonds in the rough and developing them. And in this era, that's becoming harder and harder, because if you develop them, they leave.
Right, right. Yeah, that's just the nature of the beast right now. Speaking of that, there's a great piece in the Oregonian about Oregon State and their NIL. We'll bring Ryan Clark on, and we'll start there by asking him those questions. We'll keep this Beaver preview going right here on the Fan, but first, we'll toss it over to Schultzy there with sports. 503-864-6326, that's the Fan text line. Getting your questions in or thoughts about the Oregon State Beavers as we look ahead to their season, anything like that, and we'll get to that in a moment. But first, we're joined by Ryan Clark on loan from the Oregonian to chat a little Oregon State football. Ryan, thank you for joining us. How are you today? Come again, my friend. I'm sorry, we just got you.
Yep, Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for hopping on. And look, I was we'll start with the piece you one of the pieces that you've written more recently, and that's the NIL situation going on at Oregon State. Look, it's no like secret for any of these squads, you know, Oregon State using Washington State as a parallel for the local, that NIL is kind of everything right now. Talk to me about new GM, the impact of Blueprint Sports, Damn Nation, and what the future NIL is kind of building towards at Oregon State.
Yeah, obviously the Beavers brought on Kyle Bjornstad, who used to run Damn Nation. He'll be in-house now as the general manager for all sports. Obviously the main focus for him will be, you know, football, men's basketball, women's basketball, and the like. But the changes are such that, you know, adding a group like Blueprint with the connections that it has, with the experience that it has working with, I think, like 70 athletic departments around the country, it allows for them to have a more robust NIL operation and not work with one arm tied behind their back, so to speak, to have somebody in-house, to have somebody contracted to run the collective on the outside, with the collective focusing more on corporate deals and you know, individual donations from regular folks, whereas Kyle and the folks in-house are going to be big on individual larger donors and people that they can try to solicit to back up the Brinks truck, so to speak, for Oregon State. And obviously they're trying to step it up because they need it. They need to be more competitive in the NIL marketplace if they want to continue to be competitive on the field in all sports.
Ryan, when you're looking at this Oregon State team, they do have – there's this contrast of like, oh, they're dead, you know, they can't do this, they can't do that, but they're still finding a way to bring in some impact players. Offensively, obviously, the big name is Malik Murphy. Defensively, they bring Rajon Davis up. They're still able to facilitate and manufacture deals that matter and kind of plug and play some guys with experience and still some potential upside. Like, when you look at this roster and you kind of look at where they're at, where do you kind of see this team in relation to where they are now and where they need to get to?
Yeah, I think that they are underrated on the whole. I think that Oregon State has invested at different positions. You talk about transfers like Rajon Davis and especially Malik Murphy, who they spent seven figures on reportedly to play quarterback. Like, that matters. And the retention matters for Oregon State and guys returning from injury and the development and the culture overall that OSU seems to be building under Trent Bray. This is a team that, given the favorability of its schedule, I think has the potential to win, if everything falls their way this season, 9 or 10 games. And that would be a massive turnaround from last year, given the fact you lose six of your last seven games down the stretch and finish 5-7 on the year and your program's in flux. But I think this is a year that, despite the chaos of college sports and despite how much the Beavers have been impacted by it specifically, that they could surprise some people and that they could, because of the favorability of their schedule, go on a nice run to end the season.
All right. Here's the big question, I think, for if you're a Beaver fan or if you're a Beaver adjacent. What the hell's going on with Darius Clemens?
Right now, we don't know. At this point, when we were at practice, we saw it happen. He injured his left leg. He went down non-contact and was in a lot of pain. He's been both on a scooter and on crutches with a boot on his left foot. At this point, we've been plumbing for answers from Trent Bray and obviously not gotten any. He's typically a guy that lets the players make their announcement, as we saw last night with Micaiah Tung, the linebacker, medically retiring after 4 injuries in 5 years, which is obviously terrible luck for that guy, somebody that would have factored in at inside linebacker. But Darius, right now, we don't know whether it's something that's long-term or something that'll be a few weeks before he's back, but it's not looking like he will be available for the Beavers' first game versus Cal based on the crumbs of information that we've gotten so far.
Ryan Clark on loan from the Oregonian joins us to talk Oregon State football. I want to get into that coach's room real quick with Bray and especially kind of Gunderson in the offense. What kind of pressure is on that coaching staff this year? I don't want to say hot seat necessarily, but what kind of pressure is quarterback play last year was really brutal for the majority of the season. Obviously Murphy comes in. So talk to me a little bit about like what the heat index is in that coaching room.
Yeah, I think that there is definitely pressure to live up to the expectations of being a more balanced offense, of utilizing a guy like Murphy in such a way that, you know, he lives up to his potential. You got to remember, this is a former five-star guy, went to Texas, backed up Quinn Ewers, got his first opportunity at Duke to start, and, you know, had a good season last year, but Duke did choose to move on from Murphy. And you got to wonder as far as, you know, whether he lives up to that hype this year and how that impacts the offense overall. But they're still going to be a run first team. Obviously, Anthony Hankerson, you know, carries the load for them. But Saladin Allah has really come on and gained some weight this fall and is bigger, stronger, faster than he has been. It's an offense that has, you see the potential of them being more balanced. You see the receivers that they have in Trent Walker and an upstart guy this fall that we've seen in Eddie Freehoff, a redshirt freshman out of Prineville. Really interesting story there. The potential is certainly there. The question is, can Murphy catch on fast enough to get in a good enough rhythm early in the season for the Beavers to get going and not fall in a deep hole? Because those first four games are a real challenge.
Kind of a two-parter here for you. How big is bringing Kavanaugh back into the fold on the offensive line been for them? And considering they're returning all their starters, and even with that activity in the transfer portal bolstering their depth, most of their starting offensive unit across the board, with the exception of Murphy, it looks like it's going to be returners. And you've got guys in Caulfield, and you bring in Riley Williams at tight end, or you're just kind of reinforcing kind of what you are. You're kind of that identity. How much does having some of the old guard in Kavanaugh kind of coming back in, being the offensive line guru, kind of feed into maybe trying to tap into that vein of the Oregon State history?
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that fits the mold of an Oregon State coach and an Oregon State offensive line coach specifically, not just because he was here with Mike Riley for all those years and developed some of the best offensive lines in the country, but just his presence, his aura. You know, he might not use that word as a much, much more old school guy, but he has it. And it matters for what I think is a talented and deep Oregon State offensive line room. The question at this point for them is health. They've got a few guys who are starting caliber that had been dinged up coming out of the spring. They're much healthier now than they were at the start of camp, but not everybody is back. And a test for that depth will be these first couple of weeks against Cal and Fresno State. You know, how do they protect Malik Murphy while he's still figuring out the offense? But what I've seen, regardless of who's on the field during fall camp, is this O-line is getting a great push on the run and continuing to solidify that identity of Oregon State football. They're not going to just be a ground-and-pound team that if they can't run the ball, game's over this year, but certainly that's going to be central to their identity. And you mentioned Riley Williams at tight end. That's a guy who has the potential to, you know, make good on his potential and add to the tight ends room with a bit of a local flair and being a former Central Catholic guy. Huge, huge tight end, 6'5", 270, big, strong guy, great in the run game, and extremely deft feet for a dude his size. So excited to see what he does.
You mentioned it best. Those first four games are going to be kind of a rough stretch, but we should learn a lot about this team. Should ease up a little bit after that. Realistic expectations, Ryan? I mean, you know, due to the schedule, you could maybe squeak out 8-9 games, or are we looking at maybe another 5-7? Like, could this team start off 1-3?
I certainly think 1-3 is possible, and then after a 1-3, you could get to 9-3. That's how crazy the final stretches compared to the opening, right? You know, it's hard to beat a team twice. They'll have to play Washington State twice down the stretch, and the second one is in Pullman in late November, which is sure to just be lovely weather up there.
Guilty as charged. I am alumni. It is not fun up there at that
time.
Yeah,
I look forward to getting a rental car when I'm trying to get around up there. But regardless of my own personal perils, you know, the schedule overall, obviously, the start is brutal. You essentially have to win those first two games, right? Cal is a team that you feel like you're on the same level of as a program, same with Fresno State, if not a bit above them. You got to win those two games because at Texas Tech and at Oregon in back-to-back weeks, you know, a lot of folks have penciled that in pretty much as guaranteed L's for the Beavers. Nothing's guaranteed in college football, but those programs have just spent so much more money on their rosters, and especially Texas Tech. They've basically built this, you know, pick your poison out of the transfer portal $50 million roster, which is insane. I do think that is a potential upset win for the Beavers if they can put it all together really well in the first two games, only because you've got all these pieces coming together for Texas Tech that you don't know if they fit together quite yet. But the backstretch, their final seven games are all against teams below them in the FPI, ESPN's FPI, however reliable that might be. A couple of them are past the 100 mark too. You know, got Appalachian State, which is a long way to go for them on the road, but certainly not a program that you feel like you should compete closely with.
Lastly, future of the in-state rivalry, formerly known as the Civil War.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the things I keep hearing, and these are obviously unofficial statements and rumors on the street, is that there is a possibility of the game not being played next year and then being resumed in 2027. At this point, nothing is finalized. There is still the possibility, you know, of the Beavers and Ducks working out their schedules. But you see schedules opening up for both of the teams in the future, just not quite next year, which is already currently set for both of them. You got the Beavers transitioning into the reformed Pac-12. There's a lot of complication at play here, and it takes both of the schools to play ball to really get the rivalry game solidified into the future.
All right, that's Ryan Clark on loan from the Oregonian. Go check him out. Read his pieces. There's a bunch of great stuff up right now. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. We'll check back in during the season, all right?
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, my friend. That is Ryan Clark from the Oregonian. He writes a lot of great stuff, you know, follows the Beavs over there at the Oregonian. So definitely check him out. Give him a follow. Yeah, easy follow. And I know Dirt and Sprague have him on from time to time, too. So check him out when he's over there. We come back. We'll finish up this chatter about Oregon State as we press on the firm 105.1 The Fan. All right, big thanks to Ryan Clark from the Oregonian joining us to chat some Oregon State Beavers. We will do Washington State tomorrow, and then next week we'll dive into Oregon and UW to get you your locality fill as we reach closer and closer to week one. Do you think, you know, just kind of laughing and having, since we got a lot of kind of quick seggy here, if you're Oregon State and Washington State, you know, and you're kind of like worried about like the future of your programs, you don't play week zero. That's kind of a plus, right?
I mean,
why do I feel like week zero is such a negative connotation? Like Iowa State and Baylor, they're fine. They're playing in Ireland. Like, that's okay. But like, I don't know. I feel like if I played week zero, that would make me feel like I was not part of the cool kids.
I don't really care, to be honest.
It switches from year to year.
Dynamite, right? Drop in, Monty. Yeah,
just
well, I feel like some years it's better.
It can be, but
some years it kind of sucks, like this year.
You know, it's just kind of a whatever. I'm a Josh Pate guy in the sense of like 0 week is not the official start of college football. Week one is.
But they count. The games actually count.
And I'll watch, and I'm not going to disregard it, but it's like a little teaser, a little aperitif.
Kind of like baseball in Japan. Did you think that was real? Schultzy, when you watch that?
Well, see, Patrick, that's confusing because when the Mariners went way back when, they played two spring training games in Japan and
right.
then also played two regular season games. So that was just like, what are we doing?
But I think we were doing the hot corner during the Japan series.
Yeah.
Did we feel like that was real baseball, wasn't even though it counted?
Wasn't there a week between it?
There was.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Dodgers played two games and then they were off.
That's the weird part about it, is that huge, huge gap between playing.
But like week zero, I watched those games like with a magnifying glass because I was just stoked to have real baseball.
You know what, Patrick? I'm going to say no because they're allowed to have 28 on their roster when they're in Japan. So no, that's still spring effing training, damn it.
No, it doesn't count. All right, well, we got a loaded 11 o'clock hour for you. Like I said, that's our Oregon State preview. We'll get to Oregon and UW next week. Alex Brink will be on tomorrow to chat some Wazoo football. So we'll do that as well. Coming up, I would like to ask Danny, poke him. I'm going to poke the bear.
Look at you, just being a coward.
I'm going to put, why am I being a coward?
Clock coward.
I am a clock coward.
God.
Damn right, dude. My boss likes that I'm a clock coward. Huh? There, don't be shocked as to why your boss ain't sitting in this chair no more, huh? Huh? It ain't that fancy new shiny ring he got up there, dude. It might be,
We were the most on the clock show, even with our derailments. I don't want to hear it.
I'm going to poke the bear on Danny when we come back. Plus, we'll have Tears Day in the 11 o'clock hour. Hang out with us. We're having fun. 105.1 The Fan.